Rules and Administration Committee will come to order. Today we're going to review the fiscal year 07 audit. And we have our auditor with us today. Welcome.
Thank you.
Please.
Well, I'm Jim Murray with Virchow Krause & Company. I'm a partner with the government services sector here in Minneapolis. And I put in front of you a kind of a summary of our audit, and I'll talk from that. And so I'll go to what's labeled page 2, report to Rules and Administration. And we,
Senator, send him.
And maybe it's to you, Mr. Chair. Is this audit of the financial budget of the Senate? Is what are we auditing here? What are we hearing about,
Mr. Murray?
It is just the section of the Minnesota State Senate, and maybe you'd have a better idea than I as far as, I mean, it's a division of the general fund of the state of Minnesota, so we're not auditing the state of Minnesota. It's
right.
Just the expenditures that apply to the senators.
Okay.
Yeah. Senator Fredrickson, did you want to add?
That's it. Okay.
Okay.
Thanks.
Mr. Murray, continue.
Okay. Starting on page 2 here, the engagement to audit the transactions of the Minnesota Senate. The rules that we follow are the generally accepted accounting principles and government audit standards, which go beyond the generally accepted auditing standards. It brings into an element of checking for laws and compliance with laws and regulations and things, and I'll get into that as we go look at the report. But some of the things that we look at in an audit are the financial statement assertions. You know, I have them listed there, bullet-pointed: existence, completeness, rights and obligations, valuation, presentation, and disclosure. So in essence, we're looking at source documents to make sure there is support for the transactions that are being recorded in the financial accounting system. And that for the period that we're auditing, that all the transactions are encompassed within that period. That's the completeness assertion. Rights and obligations, you know, your assets, liabilities, if there's contracts on leases and that type of thing, that we make sure we know that and we see those payments and things being recorded through your financial system. Valuation of assets and things, making sure they're valued in accordance with fair market value, basically. And then presentation and disclosure is making sure your audit report follows all the rules and regulations for governmental reporting. Turning to page 3, just how we approach the audit, there's a planning stage, and we go talk to the staff and figure out timing of the engagement, what works best for the staff to have us come. And the reporting of the financial statement like we're doing here, that ends up being dictated by circumstances and things. I mean, we're looking at the June 30th, 07 report, and you're almost finished with 08 already, but it takes a while to finish an audit, and there's been some other things that have happened that kind of delayed it. And then getting into the audit itself, establishing a materiality level. An audit doesn't mean that we're looking at every single transaction. So based on statistical theory, we establish materiality levels, which in essence are a dollar amount. If something is underneath that dollar amount, we'll say it's immaterial or trivial, and those type of things may show up, and we don't report that to you. And the way we establish the materiality level, what we're trying to do is catch really material items that would affect the financial statements and would affect your decision-making and things looking at the statements. And then another element of planning the audit is obtaining an understanding of internal control. And under this audit, June 30th, 07, was under the old audit standards yet. And those standards just required us to gain an understanding of the internal control. The new audit standards go further, and I'll talk about that in a few minutes, but this next year's audit, we'll have to get more documentation on your internal control systems. So once we understand the internal control systems, moving on to page 4, I mean, there's really 5 elements to the internal control system. The control environment, which sets the tone of the organization. They call it the tone at the top. And that's been in the news really the last, since Enron, and all the changes that have happened with publicly traded companies, all the rules they have to follow, Sarbanes-Oxley and things. The new audit standards for this next year's audit, we have to look at those type of things and document that tone at the top. You know, are you really following your rules? And if someone breaks the rules, is there a consequence? Do you enforce the rules? That type of thing. Risk assessment, looking at, you know, risky areas of an audit. I mean, with your entity here, you're not a private business, so you don't have as many risks as a private business that we might be auditing would have. Control activities, the policies and procedures you have in place to ensure that your directives are carried out. Information and communication. You have these set of rules. How do you communicate those to staff so people know about the rules and know what's expected? And then the monitoring activities is a process that assesses the quality of internal control over time. You know, you have the rules. If there are infractions, what happens? You know, are you enforcing those rules? So we're looking at those elements when we're designing our audit tests. And if there's areas that are more risky, you know, we focus our audit attention to those areas. Then moving on to page 5, the risk of material misstatement and financial statement assertions. There's what auditors call inherent risk, which basically is if nobody was watching over, say, Eileen, and Eileen had full control over the checkbook, what could she do? You know, could she give herself a raise and no one would notice? And that could happen if it was not a big raise. But if there were no controls, that's something that could happen. You don't have that. You have controls, but that's what inherent risk is. Then control risk is your controls that you do have in place. If nobody's monitoring them, what's the risk that if an error did occur, that it would slip through your system and not be caught? And then detection risk is on our side from the auditor. If a material misstatement wasn't caught by your system, then we have to design our test to try and catch that, and that's the detection risk. And that enters into that materiality level that we look at. Moving on to page 6. You know, when we come here and perform our field work, some of the things we go through perform a preliminary analytical review, which is taking your records, your trial balance, and basically comparing the prior year or maybe the prior 2 years and looking for changes. And then that then will cause us to design tests or inquiry to find out what caused those variances. Now, we read all the Rules and Administration Committee minutes, and starting with SAS 99 a few years ago, we also have to perform fraud inquiries. So we will interview staff or members of your committee and basically ask if you are aware of any fraud or any suspicions of fraud. And if anything like that comes out, then again, we would design our audit tests to look in those areas where suspicions might occur. And we didn't have any of that, by the way. So... then we perform tests of the transactions, and in your case, it's really the test of the cash disbursements and your payroll disbursements. We perform a search for unrecorded liabilities, which means we look into the next year, into the 08 year, and look at bills to see if some of those shouldn't have been charged back to the 07 year. And if they should have, then they get booked as an accounts payable on your balance sheet. And then we perform analytical review again after we've made any adjustments, audit entries that we may have, and take another look at current year to prior year and look for variances and get explanations for those. Because we follow government audit standards with your audit, we do a test of compliance with laws and regulations. So those would be state statutes that apply with your spending and payroll-related matters, and any other rules that you may set up within your committee. We test those things. And then once that's all done, we prepare financial statements in the management letter and present a draft to your staff to review and get any comments from them. And if there are any changes, we'll make changes to that, or if there's something we didn't understand, we get clarification on. And anything that else that might come up, we would perform procedures as appropriate to make sure that the numbers that we're presenting in the report are fairly stated. Moving on to page 7. Like I had mentioned, there have been changes in audit standards. And the audit standard that affected the audit we're looking at here was Statement on Auditing Standards 103. And what that standard did is it's getting ready for the next new standards that affect, there's actually 8 new standards that will affect next year's audit. And what this standard says is that any material weaknesses need to be reported for significant adjustments we find during the audit. If you don't prepare your own financial statements, that now is a material weakness. And that really comes out of Sarbanes-Oxley and publicly traded companies. For years, they've had to have an accounting staff that prepares their own financial statements. And the auditor comes in and issues an opinion on their work, in essence. You don't have the staff to do that. So I would say probably 95% of our audits have a comment on this point now. And then our management letter comments, which I'll get into in a few minutes, but there are a few things that we commented on there. But other items that we do to complete the audit is obtain a management representation letter, which is basically a letter saying you have given us all your records and you haven't hidden anything from us and you're not aware of any fraud or illegal activities that have occurred. In the publicly traded sector area, the CEO actually has to sign a statement. He's legally can be held legally accountable if there is material errors in the statements. And again, that's out of Sarbanes-Oxley. The new standards that this 103 doesn't go to that extent, but it's kind of following in line with what the publicly traded companies are doing now. So let me go to the management letter. I think that's in your packet.
It is.
And the first couple pages there just talk about how we've planned the audit, which I've already talked about. And then down the bottom of that first page under the cover, we point out the material weaknesses there. And they're the first bullet point. Currently, the financial statements are prepared by the auditor. And then we go in further detail into the report. And during the current year, we did make several entries, which under the new standard have to be reported here. And that's what we're doing. And then the following page, documentation of internal control over major financial processes is not adequate. And it's not adequate because somebody doing something wrong. It's just the new standards requiring more documentation. So with this next year's audit, we've developed spreadsheets that we'll give to staff to fill out. And you may have them already. I don't know if Cheryl's given them. Okay. But basically what it is, it's more detailed of your processes. And then it also would lay out the control points, you know, who reviews payroll. And one thing to keep in mind, someone may be reviewing payroll, but make sure there's an approval process. Someone signs off. So as an auditor, we can look and see, oh, yeah, whoever was supposed to sign off and approve, there is a signature there. Do you have a question?
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Frederick.
Chairman, Mr. Murray, these spreadsheets and documentation that you've given to our staff now, is that sufficient to meet the new criteria in its entirety, or is this an interim step between where we are now and perhaps adding more an accounting staff or adding additional personnel to the Senate system to completely perform that function in-house?
The spreadsheets that we'll give you once they're filled out, those will meet the standard. So this comment will be taken out of there then. And what they suggest, though, this is based off a COSO, which has been around back since the savings and loan crisis back in the 80s. There was a commission that came up with Committee Against Sponsoring Organizations. They came up with guidelines on internal control. And one of the things they say, these spreadsheets will meet the audit standard, but good policy would dictate you'd actually have an accounting manual, written, and you may have some form of that already. Because what they say is really you should have enough documentation that somebody new coming into an accounting position could take that manual and read through it and perform the duties of that person. These spreadsheets that will be filled out, I mean, those will be a good start to help modify what you may have and add to it. So,
Mr. Chairman,
Senator?
Mr. Murray, follow-up question or two. When did you give those new spreadsheets to our staff? And since we only have 2 months left in this fiscal year, is there sufficient time to implement those spreadsheets and come in compliance with the new standards for this current fiscal year's audit?
Yeah. Eileen,
can
did
I take that?
Sure. Yeah.
Mr. Chair,
please identify yourself. Please up to the microphone. To the microphone.
Eileen Lunzer, Fiscal Services. Senator Fredrickson, we haven't received the spreadsheets yet, but I did talk to our lead person, Cheryl Poole, with Virchow Krause, and she said she'd sit with us, show us their spreadsheets, and then we'd look at what we have in place already. So maybe we don't want to change things up too much because we really do report things so many different ways. I have to laugh way back when with Pete Marwick. They told us we were redundant in how many times we would report something, and so I would just like to sit with Cheryl. So we do not have those yet.
And those spreadsheets, they were just something that we developed to help our clients comply with this new standard. So if you have something in writing already, and that's probably why
yes.
Cheryl wants to look,
right.
You know, why create the spreadsheet if the documentation that you have now will meet the standard?
And it's just something that Cheryl didn't ask for during the audit because we knew we were going into fiscal year 08 with this new government standards.
And being that generally we're just looking at your disbursements function and your payroll function, there'll really just be two areas that will have to be documented and polished, basically. So it shouldn't be a huge job. So moving on to what's labeled page one in that report. And this talks about the internal control documentation, the reporting, and I've gone through this already, the five components, so I won't bore you with that again. Moving on to page three. This is a comment on the new audit standards that will be effective for this next year. Statement on auditing standards 104 through 111. And it really changes the way the auditors approach things. They've talked about a risk-based approach for years, and these standards really are forcing firms to look at a risk-based approach. And it also requires you to really gain an understanding of the entity that you're auditing. Myself, all I do is audit governmental units, and VK has always been built on being specialized. So a lot of things these new standards are saying to do, we have done, you know, communication with the boards. The new standards will require that before we start this next year's audit, that someone will have to be designated on the committee from the governing body as a kind of a point person for us to talk to as we're planning our audit. To gain an understanding if you have suspicions in any areas or if you want certain areas looked at closer. So they're trying to get the governing boards more involved with the auditors in planning the audit. And then at the end of the audit, you know, we're having this conversation here, which we've always done. So then that will be the reporting of the results of the audit. What the new standards do is make us look more at technology that's used and the software programs that are used to process your transactions. So we've had our IT people doing these evaluations and just looking at backup procedures and things. And being that you're part of the state of Minnesota, I don't know that that'll have a big effect on you because all your data storage and things is done at the state level. So I'm guessing we'll have to go to the state and see what they have in place for backup procedures for their servers and that type of thing. And that IT portion, a lot of it is just that we need to keep in our audit file to show that we've done it. We've gained an understanding of the information system. So the clients that we've done this on, they say it's another accountant's full employment act because it has been a lot of extra work. On larger organizations, it can take up, add 20% more time to the audits. So let's see. Moving on to page 5. We've got a comment there, entering of payroll data. Payroll data is entered from the personal action notice. And one of the things we're suggesting is just to have a better segregation of duties. The person entering payroll ideally wouldn't have access to changing pay rates because that could lead to that person, if there is an oversight, changing their own rate or changing somebody's rate without it being noticed. So one of the things we have here is a way that you could get a second person looking at that if you wanted to. It's a management decision, but we think it'd be a wise thing to do. prior year comments, we talked about cross-training and transition planning. We still have that in there. We encourage you to make effective cross-training, especially in the payroll assistant area, a priority. Just in case somebody is sick or something or leaves, that the payroll assistant knows the full, all the duties of that position, so she could step in, she or he could step in for that person. Same way with accounts payable, the assistant should know the payable system and the payroll system, so if somebody is sick or leaves, you have a backup, so business can go on as usual. On page 6, the senator phone bills, that's something that we've been asked to look at over the last few years, and during the testing this year, we still noted that there were 17 senators that, at least for 1 month, the phone bills hadn't been approved. And again, they may have looked at them and approved them, but unless there's a signature on there approving them, we have to report it as a finding, in essence, that it didn't appear to be approved. And if I remember correctly, the reason for that is back a few years there had been some abuse of that phone system. So the next comment there, reconciliations. Since you are part of the state of Minnesota, there's some reconciliations that are done between your records and the state system. And this year it appeared that timely reconciliations between the senator's control account and the state system had been completed. And we're also recommending that you reconcile total expenditures on the state's control sheet to subsidiary records on a monthly basis. And that may be being done already. So, yeah. The balance of this report, communication to the Rules and Administrative Committee, these highlighted items are things that we're required to report to you, our responsibility under generally accepted auditing standards and audit and government audit standards. I won't read through all these. I'll just hit the bullet or the highlighted points. Significant accounting policies, accounting estimates, audit adjustments, and there on page 7, there we're showing a couple of adjustments that we had. We had adjustments to accrued payroll and adjustments for accounts payable. And in addition, there were some uncorrected items, and this is where the materiality comes in. There was $34,322 of invoices that were part of the 07 expenses that really related back to the into the 08 business. But since they're under the materiality limits, we didn't need to make an entry for that, but we have to point that out that those were in there. Then disagreements with management, we had none. Consultations with other independent accountants, there weren't any, to my knowledge. And issues discussed prior to retention of the independent auditors, there was nothing substantial there other than, we have to get an engagement letter from you and things. And then difficulties encountered in performing the audit, we didn't have any difficulties. The staff did a good job. So are there any questions on that report?
Question.
On going back to that handout that I had given you.
Senator Sunjohn.
Mm-hmm.
Can I would just go back to page 6 on the senator's phone bills, which I have to admit personally, I sign every month without a lot of scrutiny. I think I know how I use my phone. I think it's proper, but is this a real meaningful audit? Do you scrutinize telephone numbers or?
No.
This is an honor system.
Yeah, we've just been asked by the committee in the past to look at those because apparently there was some abuse at one point.
I think we should get those senators to sign up. They should look at them. So we have.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Fiscal Services, and we get that quite a bit. We do not send your bills to you. That would be Marita Gould. She sends them to you, and you sign off and send them to her. But for the most part, she says she's had very good luck with Senator signing off. And we felt, and leadership at the time, Senator Dean Johnson, felt to continue this practice as far as to have the senator sign off.
So, Senator Sunjohn, why don't we'll contact Ms. Gould, find out which ones haven't been signed off, and get those processed back to the senator so they can sign off on them. Just kind of a loose end we probably should get taken care of. And we can examine the process by which that's done to see if we can make it easier for members. You weren't here during PhoneGate, were you?
that is part of the process in planning our audit. You know, we've asked, are there special things you want us to test for? I mean, in a normal audit, unless the phone bill came up in our testing, we probably wouldn't focus on phone bills. But and a lot of the audits that we've done, we audit a lot of private colleges. There they've asked us to look at travel costs, expenses, and things like that to make sure.
Where are we?
Yeah, if you want to go back to that first handout,
yep.
Page 9. This is the out of the audit report. It's a statement of revenues, expenditures, and changes in fund balance. And this shows what you had budgeted for revenues, $20,654,000. And actual revenues taken in were $20,814,675. So you took in $160,000 more than was budgeted.
What is that other receipts?
That was a miscellaneous.
Mr. Chairman, other receipts are deposits that we receive for, let's say, tapes for media. We also got an insurance refund for employee share and employer share of insurance this year. That was like almost $90,000 of it. Let me think. As small as a rental on a piano. These are the checks that we process through fiscal.
Somebody paid us to rent our piano? Do we have a piano? We have a piano?
Yes, we do. $20 each rental.
Okay. The Senate has a piano?
Yes.
What have you been doing with our piano, Mr. Where? Chairman?
I think the minority caucus should get it half time.
And this where, just goes back where, into
where,
the,
where is the, where is the
dedicated funds.
Where is the Senate piano? I didn't realize. Is this a piano that the state owns that we each get a piece of the action?
I believe so.
Okay. Continue.
Okay.
So we're the finance committee right now.
Yes, Senator Cohen has it.
Budget expenditures then were $20.7 million, and actual expenditures were almost right on $20,758,000 compared to $20,078,000.
We can read the numbers. Anything you want to point out on here?
Not really. You were intending on pulling down, drawing down fund balance, $133,000. You actually added the $55,768 to it. So ending fund balance, $1,310,460. That's what carries forward into the 08 year and is available for expenditures in 08. So,
is that fund balance, and this may not be in your bailiwick, so if it isn't, don't say, but is that a relative to the size of our budget? Is that a good fund balance, not a good fund balance? If it's not in your bailiwick, you don't have to have an opinion.
Yeah, it's, I mean, if you were a city government, I could tell you, but.
If you were a what?
If you were a city government, there's guidelines for that. But
what's the guideline?
Generally, 2 to 3 months of expenditures should be in fund balance. And, I mean, if you were to do that, you'd have a lot of money in there. And the reason a city has to have that much money is because they're having to take care of their infrastructure and things, and they have to have money for emergencies. Whereas in your case, it's pretty routine expenditures every year, and actually in the back of the audit report there's a statistical statistics section which shows back to 2003, and your expenditures are very consistent from 2003 to 2007.
Mr. Chairman, I was just going to offer that I think at some time periods in the past when we're coming up to election years, we've let that fund balance build up. Because as senators leave the Senate and new ones come in, there might be staff turnovers and there's a payment of unused vacation. Unused vacation, unused sick time, and kind of expenditures.
Any questions by members? So apparently, as I understand it, we've got some work to do internally here to make sure we're able to meet this new kind of level of audit standard that's that everybody's moving to under the
right.
So a possibility, members, and we don't have to decide this today, but a possibility would be that we should probably get a little subcommittee or working group or something that can work over the interim a little bit to do whatever needs to be done here. And does that make sense, Senator Frederickson? And we maybe could draw members not on this committee, just a few members who would spend some time to work on this with the staff. Or to oversee kind of the staff working on it. Does that make sense to the auditor?
Yes, and maybe Cheryl could be part of that meeting then. And,
yes.
Yeah. Cheryl Pohl, the other auditor. Yeah.
Your person.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's the person who you have the most day-to-day or most contact with on.
Mr. Chairman, yes. Cheryl Pohl and Amanda Allard.
And they are local people?
Yeah.
Okay. Any other thoughts on this? Okay, we will. Give us the time frames on this. When would we need to have things in place for the next audit?
Like Eileen was pointing out, if you have a lot of it documented already, it may just be some tweaking is all to meet the new standard. It may not be a lot of work. But
when does the clock start on that? July 1st? The new documentation or the?
Yeah, the new fiscal year, yes.
So July 1st. Yeah. So if we're going to do something, we should probably get to work on it right after we adjourn, get stuff in place so that
through June and June, everybody can get whatever needs to be done.
Yeah, actually, it would affect
current fiscal year.
The fiscal year you're in right now.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, so sooner we can get at it, the better.
Yeah.
Okay.
And really, I don't anticipate it's going to be a lot of work to meet this new standard. So.
But further, we should get at it as soon as we can after session.
Yeah.
I'd move that we accept the audit of the Minnesota State Senate for fiscal year ending June 30th, 2007. Senator Frederickson's motion. Okay, discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion adopted. And members, if you have any thoughts on how maybe, or if you want to volunteer to be on a subcommittee or a task force or something. Now, I presume the House would be going through the same thing right now, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
So we maybe will touch base and see what they're thinking here also. Is the executive branch moving into this too? Are they?
I would assume so, yeah.
So we maybe should just do some checking around to see what others are doing and
it was an odd implementation date, so the calendar year 07 audits had to apply the standard this last year. So our December 31st year-end audits, they've all complied with this standard. So,
Mr. Murray, we appreciate your work on this. And do you do this yourself, or you have a team that works on this, or?
Yeah, there's about, out of the Minneapolis office, there's probably 30 of us within the government services practice area.
And how many would be at work on ours?
There's Cheryl Pohl is the manager in charge of the audit, and then Amanda Allard is a senior accountant, and sometimes they'll bring a staff accountant along, too. So usually three people here at field work time.
And you get to come in and take the victory lap, then?
Amanda was going to come, but she had an emergency happen, so she couldn't be here. But and then Cheryl's on vacation; otherwise, she would be here with me too.
Yeah, this is going to be a trick question. Are you for? Is it pink and blue timesheets? What is the? Is it pink and blue?
It is pink and blue.
Do you have an opinion on pink or blue timesheets?
No comment.
Senator Bach.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I have a question on page 12, actually, of the audit. Normally, when I look at expenditures, I just kind of look where things have made dramatic changes. And I'm wondering, in the category of services, what historically has changed with the use of consultants, where we spend $175,000 in 07, but in 03, 30,000, 04, 18,000, 05, 45,000. What's changed?
Mr. Greenwald, do you have the technology?
Yes, it is. It was a programmer that was contracted who is now an employee instead of a programmer at a much reduced rate.
Is that the bulk of that?
Pardon?
Is that the bulk of that?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, not to get into the political part of it, but would, for instance, the bridge firm be entered into that in 2008, so it got higher.
It's down the middle on, in services, which is consultant.
We allowed 500,000, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know where that is.
Well, it wouldn't. That's 2008.
Mr. Chairman, but Senator Senjum, that would be 2008,
right.
And the House and the Senate gave the LCC the 250,000. We did a transfer out of our carry forward to the LCC's carry forward. So that's not going to show up here.
Oh, okay.
It will show up in our next one.
As a transfer.
As a transfer.
As a transfer.
So it would show up under LCC. Under LCC, it would be a consultant,
right.
Under LCC.
That was my only question.
Members, we should. I would be interested in your thoughts on Michelle Kelm-Helgen is interested in your ideas on what kind of information you would like as the Rules Committee on our budget, how you would like it presented. Because we're in the last year, we've been just trying to get a hold on where everything is, so that members felt they knew what our budget was and what we were spending money on. And if they thought we should be making some kinds of adjustments, we've tried to. There's better understanding of where we're at the member level. Senator Bedsole has a lot more understanding now as chair of that division. But we are very open. I am very open to making sure the Rules Committee as a whole has the type of information they feel is useful for them, because you're the governing group of the Senate here, so. And I've offered to Senator Senjum and his staff, and I think Mr. Wolf has a better understanding of where things are. So I'm just soliciting, like Senator Bach's question just now, he's obviously looking at that page. If there's information that would be helpful, or if we need to have some presentations in here on a more periodic basis, I would absolutely be interested and willing in doing that, because I think as much kind of transparency on our budget as we can provide, that's better for everybody. So, okay, thank you, Mr. Murray. I very much appreciate it. How long? We are under contract with you for how long? With your firm?
2009, Mr. Chair.
2009. Is that typically a 5-year cycle? 3-year cycle?
Three.
3-year cycle. Okay, and what? What is the best? How long have we been using your firm?
I was so hoping someone would ask.
I think this is
now.
Our fourth.
Can you find your notes? 2004, Virchow Krause.
Okay. And what is kind of the industry best practice on how often you should rotate firms or have second opinions, or what is kind of the industry standards on that?
With Sarbanes-Oxley, there has to be partner rotation every 7 years, I believe it is.
Internal to your firm. Okay.
Yeah. I haven't seen anything where they're suggesting you have to change audit firms. At one point, they were saying that, but like with a governmental entity or governmental market, there aren't a lot of firms that focus on governmental. So the Government Finance Officers Association, they used to recommend you change auditors, and they've gotten away from that because.
Are we not a high profit? Enterprise?
No, it's just that, I mean, they're unique. Governmental entities are unique. So somebody who's not used to dealing with governments, there are different rules. And really that's what the new audit standards are getting at, too, is the firms that are only doing one or two audits are probably going to get out of it.
Okay. And then how about this idea of, through here you've made several comments that we need to understand that this is not a, I think the words are detailed, complete. Is that something we should be doing periodically that we have not done for a while?
No, I think you're referring to just the aspect of an audit that we aren't looking at every single transaction. That would just cost too much money to do that.
So that's not something that you do every decade or something?
No.
Okay.
You know, just the whole theory of auditing is looking at pulling samples and things, and if we find a problem within that sample, then that leads us into that area to do more work. But for us to look at every single transaction, that would just be cost prohibitive.
And are we doing as much as we should be doing in terms of auditing? Are we spending enough on that to get what we should be in terms of oversight?
Yes. And if you follow through with the cross-training of staff, I mean, that's a good policy to have. And just the general rule is you want two sets of eyes looking at things. When fraud happens, it's when one person has too much control, you know, over the whole system. So, I mean, you have good controls with what you've got.
So those are the kind of things this little subcommittee or working group, there was a recommendation, I don't know if everybody noticed it, to do some cross-training, so... Those are types of things I think we need to just get at and think about and do or not do. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Meeting adjourned.